When you leave through the oval archway, turn left and take the long set of stairs up to your left. At the top of the stairs is an expansive work set in the stone wall below the house. Over the years, Bill had many exhibitions in Australia and overseas showing works from the sanctuary. This work, made in five parts, was taken to the USA in 1966. The unrealized goal of Bill's American mission was to find backers to finance his vision for the Holy Mountain. Next, make your way up the track, keeping left. You'll pass the figure of an Aboriginal woman with a winged child above her. Pause here or continue on until you reach the large work titled Australia Crucified. Before Bill was born, most of the ancient mountain ash forests of the Dandenongs had been harvested to build the ever-growing city of Melbourne. During his lifetime, the government endorsed further clearing and burning for pastoralists and new settlers. As a naturalist, this mass destruction distressed Bill and led to this work, Australia Crucified. Here, an Aboriginal spirit rises from the ashes of a tree stump, holding aloft the burning flame of law. As you leave Australia Crucified, you'll pass the Tree of Life on your left. This towering mountain ash was just a sapling when Bill arrived, and now it's his final resting place. A plaque commemorating Bill's life has been placed at the base of the tree. You can pause here, or by keeping left, you'll pass through the oval archway leading to the kiln. You'll find it on your left, built into the brick house. The kiln you see before you was installed for Bill to create works for the sanctuary's official opening in 1964. Frustratingly, it proved difficult to control, and about one-third of his larger scale works didn't survive firing. In 1984, Bill began this eagle work. It was an ambitious project that progressed very slowly. Elements of the work remained here unfired for 7 years, during which time Bill became physically weaker and focused on his publication, Australiandia. Finally, in 1991, the work miraculously emerged from a firing in near perfect condition. 2 years later, before it could be placed in the sanctuary, Bill passed away, making the unfinished eagle his final major work. Pause here to explore, or move now to the gallery space inside Bill's second residence. The Victorian Forest Commission built this home in the early 1960s. Bill moved here and eventually used this living room as a display space for his smaller works. He chose to live, sleep, and work in his kitchen, a very small room on one side. In the gallery, you'll find The Brute. Too many of Australia's early settlers lived by the motto, "If it moves, shoot it. If it doesn't, chop it down." Here, Bill has given us a monstrous picture of a white destroyer, crowned in ammunition, ready to light a bushfire with his cigarette, intent on the pursuit of death and destruction. Leaving no doubt about the brute's motivations, Bill wrote him a creed that starts, "I am, as a nation, the brute in Australia. 200 years ago I landed here and wrote the law of the land on the end of a gun barrel and arsenic of poison." We'll now leave the gallery and take the main drive downhill to your left, towards some of Bill's most famous works and the last two stops on our journey. As you walk, to your left, you'll pass two elevated pieces. The first is the figure of a young Aboriginal woman. A little further on is the figure of a man propelled upward by the claws of a Dreamtime possum. Further down to your right, you'll see a large and intricate inscription describing the Earthly Mother. Continue on and take the short staircase on your left to see her. As you make your way, we'll hear some of Bill's thoughts on this piece.
Well, the Earthly Mother worked down the big drive here. I went 200 miles west of Alice Springs with my bags of clay to get that woman. And I got her. She's there. She's there. I'm satisfied because she's very noble and beautiful there, dominating Earthly Mother.
In 1960, while in the centre, Bill heard that a group of Pitjantjaras were coming in from their country over 320 kilometres away. Bill was excited. These were Aboriginal people with little or no contact with whites, and he dearly wanted to model them in clay. He rushed to pack his truck, and alone he made the long, arduous drive into the desert to meet with them. Luckily, this remarkable woman, the Earthly Mother, allowed Bill to model her in clay. Bill made good progress on his work, but a new challenge arose.
And soon as I half through the work, the camp shifted, and I had to follow them up. Then I drove the truck, without a license, I drove the truck into the earth because the earth was soft and I got bogged up to the wheels. And who should come along with the flying doctor? The flying doctor service. And he had some men with him and they pulled me out of the bog. So I had to chase her up again. It's all difficult, you know.
Let's continue to the final major work in the sanctuary, Mara Kudata, located on the left near the end of the main drive. Professor Theodore Strello, Bill's lifelong friend and supporter, has provided an explanation of the Mara Kudata work. In Central Australia, time began when the ancestors, supernatural beings, awakened from their sleep. They broke through the surface of a desolate earth, creating the landscape and its creatures, including the Aboriginal people. After the ancestors had accomplished their creative labours, an overpowering weariness fell upon them. They fell into a deep sleep, leaving behind them sacred centres and trails of spiritual life. Central Australian Aboriginal people integrate these creation stories into their personal spirituality through reincarnation beliefs. That is, each person believes they have two souls, their human soul, and the soul that their mother acquired from an immortal totemic ancestor. These beliefs and stories spiritually connect each person with his or her totem, their supernatural ancestors, and with their sacred conception site. While the Mara Kudata story belongs to particular clans of Central Australia, similar spiritual beliefs ensured that all Aboriginal people lived in harmony and respect of their world for over 30,000 years. This belief in an everlasting home was in harmonious accord with Bill's lifelong conviction that all life is one. As you may have discovered, Bill chose the lyrebird as his totemic ancestor. The last work, set amongst the tree ferns on your left, depicts Bill's spiritual self and the lyrebird totem, rising up as a flowing of life everlasting. This brings us to the end of our journey through the William Ricketts Sanctuary. Please remember to return the audio guide and map to the Information Centre. If you'd like to know more about William Ricketts and his work, just ask our friendly staff for more information. There's a range of publications and DVDs available for sale inside. Parks Victoria thanks you for exploring the William Ricketts Sanctuary, the Forest of Love, and wishes you safe travels.